Good morning, Council. The next matter on our calendar for oral argument is Bradley Harrison versus the Commissioner of Public Safety. While you're getting settled, I remind you of the rules for presenting argument. You will each have 15 minutes to present your argument. Counsel for appellant, you will also have 5 minutes for rebuttal, should you choose to use it. It's important that you state your name and identify the party you represent when you begin your argument, because we are making an audio recording for our records. That is the only recording that is permitted of today's proceedings. If you wish, the podium can be raised and lowered with the button in the under the middle. And with that, Counsel for Appellant, you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, Counsel. My name is Alexandra Robinson. I am an Assistant Attorney General for the State of Minnesota, and I am here on behalf of Appellant Commissioner of Public Safety. On appeal, this court is limited to reviewing the record before it. And that is precisely the problem today, because there is no record of a discovery order from the district court. And without that discovery order, it's an abuse of discretion to sanction a party for not complying with an order that does not exist. We are asking this court to reverse the rescission of the revocation and remand for further proceedings. On October 24th, respondent filed a motion to compel discovery with the district court. This is 2 days prior to the set first hearing on October 26th that did not actually take place. Within 24 hours of receiving that motion, appellant provided all discovery in its possession to respondent. So that means on October 25th, respondent was in possession of everything that we had in our possession.
Right, and this is an unusual, somewhat unusual, in that the underlying, whether there's a criminal case involving the same circumstances, I don't know at this point, but there wasn't at the time of this implied consent proceeding. So the commissioner didn't have access or hadn't been provided with anything from what a prosecuting authority might have had.
Correct, Your Honor. That connected criminal case was not charged until April of this year. So at that time, the prosecutor for that county would have provided respondent with all evidence discoverable. I think it's important for the court to know that the commissioner is not in privity with a county sheriff's department. While the Minnesota State Patrol and the BCA are clients of the commissioner, that is not the case here. So to get additional discovery from McLeod County Sheriff's Department would require an order. Minnesota statute section 169A.532D is very clear. There's a limited, specific, mandatory discovery that's required from the commissioner implied consent cases, and everything else must be from a court order. For us, we must present that court order to McLeod County Sheriff's Department to be able to comply. Moreover, we need a due date of when to comply by, and that was not provided in this case because there was no order.
Are you aware of any precedent that would suggest that there doesn't actually need to be a written order or an order that can be found on a transcript of the proceeding?
So first, I would say that there's nothing on the transcript. The court is always able to make an oral order, but it's reduced in writing. Nothing was ordered from the bench here because it was an off-the-record conversation. Parties need to be on notice of what's being asked of them, and that didn't occur here. I would also say, again, Minnesota statute 169A.532D is very clear. If it's not mandatory from our office, it must be in an order from the court. And we have case law in addition to that statute that supports that. That's Abbott versus Commissioner of Public Safety.
It was basically the transcript of the actual reading of the implied consent that they were looking for or asking for, the recording?
It's unclear what additional video they were asking for. They were given from our office all of the jail video that we had in our possession at that time. So if they were asking for additional body-worn camera or squad video, we would need to know exactly what that is in order to be able to provide it.
Well, didn't they ask for any other audio or video that had been available? And I think they had indicated that the jail video showed the officers had cameras, body cams. And so I think my understanding is that they wanted to know if there was any either audio and or video from the body cams from the officers. Isn't that what they were asking about?
That may have been what respondent was asking about, but the motion to compel discovery asked for everything within the commissioner's possession. Everything that was in the commissioner's possession was provided on October 25th. We were not notified again from respondent until November 28th, 2 days prior to the actual hearing, that they wished for additional video evidence. At that point, that had not been ruled on. There is not an order requiring it, and it's the position of the commissioner not to act as an intermediary to a third party in providing discovery to respondent.
Right, and what I'm asking about is what they had asked for 2 days before the hearing. It seemed, wasn't it the reference to the potential, any potential body cam videos?
Yes.
Okay, yes, thank you. Also, I want to go back to the question about an order from the court. And you reference 169A.53 subdivision 2D, and that it states that no other discovery is available unless it's upon order of the court.
Yes.
Could there be solely an oral order? In other words, an order by a court on the record that is part of a transcript? Would that alone be sufficient to comprise an order by the court?
I would think so, because it's reduced to writing. You have a transcript of a hearing, but here we did not have a hearing.
Okay.
And that's
I just
the issue.
Okay, thank you. I just want to clarify, because it sounded like you're mm-hmm. saying an order had to be reduced in writing, but as long as it's in a transcript, that would be sufficient if it...
Right. District court judges rule from the bench all the time. I mean, we know that, but when it's ruled from the bench and you're being heard on a discovery issue, you can get the transcript, and that wasn't the case here. And, you know, had the commissioner been on notice of any order or any date by which it was due, the commissioner would have had the opportunity to respond to it, either by complying and requesting that additional evidence from McLeod County Sheriff's Department, or because the case on the criminal side was not charged yet, there may have been Minnesota government data practices concerns under Section 13 for an ongoing criminal investigation. Commissioner may not have been able to provide that additional video, but we do not know, and we missed out on that due process of being able to object or comply with this discovery order, because the discovery order did not exist.
So I have a clarifying question, and I may have missed it in the record, but did the district court judge ever take the bench at that October hearing?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
There is no record, and something that I would like to point this court to is that a separate judge ruled on November 30th. And that judge, in the transcript on page 9, says, I'm going to review the transcript from the first hearing and take the matter under advisement. There is no transcript from the first hearing, because the first hearing did not exist. You won't find a transcript, and you won't find it in the Register of Actions. Then when that second judge ruled and sanctioned with a default judgment for not filing with a discovery order, she referenced the October 26th hearing. So it's unclear how this judge based this decision off a hearing that does not exist, that we have no record of.
Well, didn't the district court judge, I'm trying to find it from the transcript, but didn't, from the November 30th hearing, didn't mm-hmm. the second district court judge mention looking at the notes?
Yes. She does mention looking at the notes, saying that they discussed a discovery order. But again, at that time, on October 26th, petitioner had been provided everything from in the commissioner's possession related to this case. That October 26th off-the-record discussion was strictly to continue the case. There was no ruling on the discovery order or the motion to compel discovery, because everything had been provided that was in our possession.
Well, and counsel, I suppose after that first hearing, either of the parties could have requested an order in writing, or even maybe drafted it for the court. I've seen that happen a lot as a trial court judge, and it doesn't seem like anybody did that here. Is that a fair statement?
That's a very fair statement. And there would be no reason for the commissioner to do so because there was no order. There was no impression leaving that off-the-record conversation that anything was being required other than to show up on November 30th for the actual hearing. When the commissioner was again notified by respondent on November 28th, that was the first time, again, 2 days prior to the scheduled hearing, that the commissioner had heard from respondent in this matter requesting additional documentation. Even if this court finds that there was an order, even though the record does not support that, and this court is limited to reviewing the record, default judgment as a sanction is the most severe sanction. You know, we like things to be ruled on the merits. And here, I would point this court to Yadwin as a previous case where a discovery order must include a date by which discovery is due. That's not provided. So sanctioning a party with the most severe sanction in this case is not appropriate. It's disproportionate even if you do find there's an order. I see that I have 4 minutes and 43 seconds left. I would like to reserve that for rebuttal.
You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal in either event. So if you...
Thank you.
Or you can be done with this statement, with your argument now, but I just want you to make sure you have time and another 5 minutes.
Can I ask her a question?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Now, if I can remember it. So this case is kind of muddied by the fact that you have different attorneys at different hearings and you have different judges at different hearings. And in the end, we want to get the specifics of an order that was at least referenced, if not made, at the first hearing. Whose favor does that cut in favor? Does it cut in favor of the commissioner, or does it cut in favor of the respondent?
In whose favor does what cut?
The fact that there is no record.
I don't think it serves anyone, and I don't think it serves justice. This court lives and dies by the record. We need to be able to reduce things to writing to see what is asked of parties. And here we don't have that. No one is served, and we're not getting a decision on the merits.
I'm just kind of baffled by why there wasn't a record here. A long time ago, I went to a seminar. It wasn't a seminar. It was a trial school where John Sonsting, who ended his career as a law professor, in talking to new judges, prosecutors, and defense attorneys, spent most of his week saying, make a record, make a record. And you all have a duty to make sure there's a record adequate to support your position. And so, you know, it seems the court didn't make a record, but it also seems that the parties didn't do anything to also make a record by submitting a proposed order or asking to go on the record and deal with it that way. So what do we make of that?
Hindsight's 20/20. I can say, because I was the Assistant Attorney General on the October 26th off-the-record conference, had I known that the opposing counsel believed there to be an order, there would have been a written response from our office. But that wasn't the case. And once the ruling did come following November 30th, we did file the request for reconsideration at the district court level and asked for an understanding of where they were finding this order to exist. But I don't think a lack of record should work to the detriment of the commissioner. I think it would be hard for this court to find that a lack of recording justifies the sanction if it was a pro se party, for instance. I don't see a difference here. And to your point about district court judges being instructed to create a record, I would also suggest that both of these district court judges are very experienced judges. Doing discovery orders is not out of the norm. Both judges I've seen orders in writing related to motions to compel discovery. So this is a weird situation. This is why we're asking for clarity from this court, because the record is silent as to a discovery order.
Counsel, though, assuming that in the criminal case they obtain a conviction, have you really lost anything? It may just be the timing of the revocation, isn't it?
I you know, the purpose of this is because we want a record. If a district court is ordering the commissioner to do something, we need to know about it and have the opportunity to respond. It's bad precedent and bad policy to not maintain a record. And we, again, the criminal case was not charged until April of this year, so I don't know that outcome. So this very well may have an impact on petitioner's revocation. So that's why I would ask this court to reverse the rescission and remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Christopher Kane. I am appearing on behalf of the respondent, Mr. Dirksen, in this matter. And before discussing the issues that I wanted to highlight, I wanted to address Judge Kirk's question about the reference to why the defense may have wanted the videos, squad car camera, body cam footage, whatever that might be. Obviously, I used to be a prosecutor for 25 plus years, so I was on that end, so now I'm on the other side of defense. And I can tell you when it comes to defending or prosecuting DBYs, we want to have the evidence there. We want to be able to make a determination. For example, one of the challenges that's typically made is the basis of the stop. Police officer says whether we're weaving within their lane. If there's squad car camera video, we'll be able to see that, right? Or if after they're pulled over, another issue that we bring is expansion of the stop. Now, you pulled this person out of the vehicle on the suspicion of DBI, but their speech wasn't slurred. They didn't have any difficulty getting their driver's license out. Their eyes weren't bloodshot. They weren't argumentative. They were civil. They were courteous. They were kind. They didn't show any indications of intoxication, yet you pulled them out of the vehicle. That's where, of course, the body cam footage comes in. I can't speculate. I wasn't the attorney handling the criminal case, but Mr. Casey, the attorney who handled the implied consent hearing at the time, wanted to be able to have that information, to be able to explore it. We want to be able to look at all the issues. As counsel pointed out, under Minnesota Statute 169A.53, there are 12 different bases upon which defense can challenge the revocation of an implied consent. Okay.
As I understand, I just want to get to what I think is the heart of this case. As I understand it, the dismissal or the rescission, basically by default, of the license revocation is premised on the failure to comply with an order that was issued October of 2023. Yeah. Did I get that right? Yes, October 26, 2023. I was an appellate lawyer for years before joining this bench. We had a rule. If it's not on the record, it didn't happen.
Right.
I'm really struggling with that because there is absolutely no record of any such order, which is the sole basis of the rescission of the revocation. Can you help me understand why we should affirm this in the absence of record support?
Excellent question, yes. I can tell you numerous times I've appeared in front of a judge with, in this case, times where I was a prosecutor and the defense attorney saying, we don't have a police report and the police officer just testified at some type of hearing that this exists, right? But there's no record. And the judge would say to me, Mr. Kane, and I assume all three of you have been on the district court bench, Mr. Kane, get that to the defense attorney. And there might not be an order for it, but you know what I did? Of course, I listened to you folks. I got that documentation or that evidence or that video or whatever it might be, even though there may not be a formal written order. If a judge tells you to do something, I follow, of course, the chain of command. I do it. I get it. And so there may not be an order that's actually written down, that's memorialized in terms of paper or an issued formal written order. That doesn't mean that one doesn't exist.
But wouldn't we expect in that circumstance that both attorneys that were in the courtroom would remember that?
I would like to think. And I can concede this from Mr. Casey's sense, and he's going to ruin the day that I say this, but he should have requested a formal order to the judge, just so we're clear, can we go on the record 2 minutes?
Right.
Can you issue this?
Right, and
That
even happens in chambers where the district court judge will pull the court reporter in and say, you don't even have to go on the bench, say, okay, we just had a conference here, we just want to put on the record what it is we discussed, what I decided, and what's going to happen.
Right.
And that didn't happen here.
That did not happen, no.
So how can that form the basis for a default judgment? An order that was never entered. As far as the record's concerned, there was never an order.
Well, if you look at the transcript from the November 30th hearing, in which Mr. McGuire appeared on behalf of the Attorney General, that he talked about his communications with Ms. Robinson, as well as the statements by Mr. Casey, where he said, Judge, it was quite clear that Judge Percio said, you've got to do this, get him this documentation, right? And he didn't know that there was he did not know that there was not a transcript or an actual audio recording. An attorney that's been practicing 19 years, I do not believe, is going to gamble and say, I'm going to throw this as a long bomb, you know, Hail Mary, and hope to gosh that they don't check me on it. Well, of course, if there was a transcript out there, it would vindicate what Mr. Casey's saying, if that's what was on there, is on that transcript, right? There's not. But he made all those representations, multiple ones saying, hey, there's an order here, that oral order by the judge saying X, Y, and Z. Get him the documentation, get him the videos, get him whatever he needs.
But here, one of the things I struggle with is the lack of clarity of even what needed to be produced. Because it's one thing to say to you as a former prosecutor, which yes. Certainly appreciate your candor, okay, counsel, under 169A, .53, you are required to produce this. And with all due respect, you haven't produced certain documents yet, the blood level alcohol, et cetera, please produce those. That wouldn't even actually require an order, but an order is required under the statute if it's something beyond. So for instance, body cam footage that is not in the possession of the Commissioner of Public Safety, which is a different entity than the Sheriff's Office. And so my understanding is the commissioner would need an order to be able to go to the sheriff's office and say, hey, realize you're a different entity, but I just received an order from the court. Can you please produce it? I know you have a separate criminal proceeding, right. And under these unique circumstances, it hasn't been filed yet, but the court said you need to produce those now.
Right.
And then the sheriff's office can, the prosecutor there can do whatever, take whatever stance it wants, say, appear before the district court, dispute it, or comply with it, whatever. But isn't that why an order, some type of written order is necessary here?
I think that would have been the ideal circumstance, but I can tell you this frankly. I think this was a form of sausage making where they say to the assistant attorney general, get this. The assistant attorney general picks up the phone and calls the McLeod County Sheriff's Office and says, what's going on with this DUI? Get those documents, get the video to us. And if you need something from me, fine. That wasn't done. The problem with this particular case, Mr. Dirksen was arrested on April 15th, 2023. Run-of-the-mill, standard DUI, right? This case was being litigated in October 26th in front of Judge Percio, and on November 30th, 5 weeks later, for a subsequent hearing, in other words, over 7 months after the DUI arrest, right? And it still hasn't been charged. Mr. Dirksen was charged this year, April 16th, 1 year and 1 day after the DUI arrest.
Right, and I certainly agree with you. That seems to be a problem, but we're talking two different departments. You're talking the Commissioner of Public Safety, and you're talking the state via the Sheriff's Office here.
Right.
And so I also appreciate the fact that there are some boundaries there.
Right.
But I have a more basic question that I want to ask, because the commissioner also filed a motion to strike the affidavit, the attorney affidavit, and any references
sure.
to it. Assuming that we grant, just assuming for the sake of argument that we were to grant that motion, what other evidence is there in the record of any written order?
If I could address that in two parts. One, I've appeared in front of the Court of Appeals in Minnesota Supreme Court 15 times, and there were a number of times occasions which, in fact, one interesting one, I had a case involving juror questions. A judge allowed the jurors to ask questions, and I had tried the case, and I had the advantage of arguing the case in front of the Minnesota Supreme Court, And I knew things about that specific case that only I could answer. The Supreme Court was asking the questions, Judge Blatz and the other judges. Justices were asking questions that only I knew that the public defender at the time, soon to be Justice Gaitis, didn't have the advantage of, because I had tried the case, she had not, right? She was at the time with the State Public Defender's Office. And they were asking questions that only I had the advantage of knowing. In this situation, actually, the roles are kind of reversed, because Ms. Robinson was at the first hearing on October 26th, so she can answer questions that she has advantage because she was actually there. Okay, so just in regards to it, I'm able to provide information that through that affidavit. Now, if you say strike it, that's fine. Look at that transcript, because in effect, Mr. Casey's inartfully drafted affidavit pretty much encapsulates what's in that transcript, which is the judge said this.
Talking about the November 30th transcript?
Yes, correct. Yes, Your Honor, because obviously there's no October 26th transcript. There is no transcript of the hearing. So you could. You certainly could, but you can still draw those same conclusions from his affidavit from that transcript. So you certainly can, but I think the court did the wise decision here by, you know, considering it and thinking, okay, we'll make a decision that one way or the other. But I think it essentially summarizes what he said and his beliefs that are summarized in that transcript from the November 30th hearing.
Well, it does seem to go beyond just the transcript, because the November 30th transcript is pretty sparse. It just has, you know, a few oblique references to the October hearing. Which is understandable, because it's a different judge.
Sure, sure. And that's actually where this problem starts. I don't know why the prosecutor took 1 year and 1 day to charge his case out. But the difficulty with it is that if under a normal DBOI, both the criminal charges would be charged out and the implied consent would be pending at the same time. And Ms. Robinson would say, well, I don't have the videos, but you can get them from the sheriff's office. And they would have disclosed them to Mr. Casey, the attorney representing Mr. Dirksen at the time. That wasn't done. And so what happens here is we have multiple judges, multiple assistant attorney generals handling a case. And I think regardless whether it's government, wherever, larger organizations, you're going to have kind of a communication glitch. I think there's a misunderstanding between what Ms. Robinson believed and what Mr. McGuire, the second assistant attorney general, understood was supposed to occur. So when he got there 5 weeks later, he doesn't know what's going on.
And we have no order.
And we have no order. Correct.
Counsel, isn't a lot of this just a product of the hangover from COVID?
That may be, yes. Unfortunately, yes. Very an excellent question, yes. Yeah. Judge Kirk, you asked about the issue about who wins or loses, who's to the benefit or the advantage of this. And counsel had pointed out that to rule in favor of the respondent, in other words, uphold the rescission of the revocation of the driver's license, would be to the detriment of the commissioner. I don't believe so. I don't think that's the case, because the court correctly pointed out Mr. Dirksen's criminal case is still pending as we speak. He has criminal DBI charges right now. So the court could say to the AG, to the commissioner, you folks lose. He still has to contend with that. If this had been ideal, those two things would have been combined and occurred at the same time.
Well, I think actually, not to put words in her mouth, but I think her point was it doesn't serve justice by not having a transcript or a written order, because then nobody knows exactly where they stand.
Well, and you bring up an excellent point. I think, frankly, this is an unfunded mandate, because the statute says specifically right there in the statute that the Attorney General's Office, the commissioner, does not have to provide video and body cam footage. And Mr. McGuire brings it up during the transcript, or it's in the transcript from the November 30th hearing, by saying, we're not statutorily obligated to provide this. But yet he still has to try and defend the challenge. It makes no sense. And counsel pointed out in her memorandum both the Hartung and the Brooks case in regards to whether or not an implied consent hearing is not a de facto criminal proceeding, that due process doesn't apply. I agree. Obviously, it's the case law. I have no basis to disagree. But there is fundamental fairness. And that's where, in this situation specifically, Mr. Dirksen is compromised. Is it to the detriment of the commissioner? No, not in this case. Specifically to this case, because his criminal charges are out there, right?
Right, but if we affirm, your client's license revocation is rescinded, and that's done, all right? I mean, they don't get to relitigate that. It would be done.
Correct, yes.
So they would be prejudiced if...
In this sense, hypothetically, and this is the whole purpose going back 40 years plus, the reason why they did imply consent was the example, I see I have less than about a minute left. An individual get arrested for DBI on November 1st, and so let's just use that, and 30 days later, he's arrested by the same, you know, sheriff's deputy. I pulled you over and I arrested you 30 days ago. What are you doing driving drunk again? And before that first case had been litigated and resolved, he gets another and gets another. And there's no way to penalize them or make the penalties more severe, right? And that was the purpose of the statute. Right now, that's a non-issue because implied consent exists out there. There's a separate second lawsuit, implied consent revocation, that 7 days from upon your arrest, your license becomes revoked. And then you have 60 days upon being noticed that it's revoked to challenge it, right? The reason why they did that implied consent was to address those situations where Dave gets a DBI on November 1st and gets one 30 days later and another and another and another, and none of those criminal cases are resolved. They're pending, right? That's the purpose of the implied consent in the first place.
You mean to enhance the later charges?
Yes. And so if Mr. Dirksen ultimately is convicted of, in this particular case, guess what? Of the criminal charges that are pending against him right now, and he gets another one, he's going to be looking at the same penalties he would if the court reversed the finding by the district court and said, no, guess what? It's not rescinded. A DBI can be enhanced either based on implied consent revocation or on a conviction. So from that sense, is the revocation lost? Yes, in terms of it's no longer there, but a conviction would be. So.
Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. First, I would like to address that respondent is asking you to do a lot of speculating here. First, I would argue that the affidavit of Patrick Casey is different than that of the transcript on November 30th, because in that transcript on page 2, lines 23 to 24, Patrick Casey says, I don't think any official order was issued at that time in reference to October 26th. During his response, respondent referenced the October 26th off-the-record conversation as a hearing, and that's squarely the issue today. It wasn't a hearing. There is no record, and it's not before this court. The commissioner isn't asking you to weigh in on a he said, she said, October 26th off-the-record hearing. We're asking you to look at this record and determine whether a discovery order exists or not. As to, you know, speculating regarding how the criminal case is going to resolve, we have no idea, but it doesn't change the fact that the commissioner is unfairly prejudiced here by not being able to proceed on the merits in this case because they were sanctioned for a discovery order that does not exist. Default judgment, the most severe sanction.
So the specific relief you're requesting is to reverse and remand for a hearing on the merits?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, you're kind of saying that there's a policy that we should be considering that we don't want to get into these he said, she said circumstances.
Exactly.
And that having something either on the transcript or a written order.
I would go back.
Regardless of who's telling us the truth is the best way for this to be resolved.
This is not the court to make a credibility determination. That's a finding of fact left to the district court.
No, I'm talking about the representations of attorneys, though.
Right. I would go back to what Judge Berkman said. If it's not in the record, it did not happen. And here there's just no record of what happened on October 26th. And, you know, once this goes to the Court of Appeals, a party isn't able to make their own record of the events by providing an affidavit of what happened because it's not before the district court and therefore not a part of this record. So that's why we would ask you to strike the affidavit of Patrick Casey.
And just to be clear, you're asking for us to strike the affidavit and any references in the brief?
Yes. Thank you for clarifying. Yes. That is what we are asking. I would also point out that McLeod did wait a long time to charge this criminal case. It waited a year and a day, as respondent said. Nowhere in the statute related to implied consent does that shift the burden to require us to provide additional discovery, and we do not do so without a discovery order, which did not occur here. Had respondent been concerned about that discovery order, they should have probably reached out prior to 2 days before the next scheduled hearing, and they probably should have gotten something in writing, because the commissioner was not on notice that anything additional was required or that they needed to go out to a third party McLeod County Sheriff's Department to procure anything additional until that date of the November 30th hearing. But even if this court finds that at that off-the-record conversation October 26th, commissioner was directed to get additional video, which does not exist, default judgment is still the most severe sanction, and it's not clear even to this court what exactly we were supposed to get. It's not clear what videos were requested. Even in his response, respondent said, well, we would want the squad video if it was a stop issue. We would want body-worn camera if we were looking at, you know, whether they had blurry eyes. How are we to know that? How are we to know what needed to be gotten and by what date? So those requirements of discovery order, even if one was done off the record, were not met. And that is why we were asking this court to reverse and remand for further proceedings on the merits. Are there any further questions?
I do not see any. Thank you, counsel.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you both. We appreciate your arguments today. The case was well presented, albeit unusual set of circumstances. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision in the statutory period. That is the last case scheduled for oral argument today. We will now recess to go consider our non-oral calendar.
All rise.